Welcome. My name is Magdalena Surma. I'm Canada's NATO podcast contributor, outreach coordinator, and project coordinator of our ATA General Assembly here at the NATO Association of Canada. Today, I have the great honor of doing an interview with Mr. Stefano Fantaroni. He is the first counselor of the Political and Public Affairs section at the Delegation of the European Union to Canada. Mr. Fantaroni, I'd like to start off by taking this opportunity to thank you for doing this interview and for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk with me today.
Well, thank you for having me, actually.
It's a complete pleasure. Mr. Fantaroni, I'd like for you to start off by telling our audience more about the significance and impact of the work that you do as the first counselor for the Political and Public Affairs section for the Delegation of the European Union to Canada.
Oh, well, that's an interesting question. I personally see the work of a diplomat. I use a metaphor here. It's a little bit the combination of the work of an engineer and a construction worker, because the main role of the diplomat and diplomacy in general, the way I see it, is to build bridges. Of course, the engineer builds bridges, you know, across the river. The diplomat tries, at least, to build bridges across countries and between countries. So that's a little bit the way I see the role of the diplomat. Perhaps, you know, to get a little bit more specific and on the metaphor as well, between the European Union and Canada, the bridge is already very large, it's very solid, it's been there for a long number of years. So in that respect, I'm not acting more like an engineer, but more like a reinforcer of this bridge and trying to maintain and fill it with more traffic, perhaps, you know, in terms of trade, our agreement on the CETA agreement is meant to do that. In terms of more cooperation between the two sides of the pond, as we say, this is the strategic partnership agreement, and more, you know, dialogue, including mobility of people, exchange, people-to-people exchanges. So that's a bit filling the bridge. That's done, I think, if you want to expand on that, it's done in basically two ways. One is the interaction between the governments of the two countries, in this case between the European Union and the government of Canada. We have our own counterpart, which is primarily Global Affairs Canada, and my counterpart in that sense, which is the External Action Service of the European Union. But also dealing with academia, think tanks, civil society organization, even the public, go to universities and schools in general, to explain a little bit what are the relations and the opportunities of our relations. And then the second part of this is what we call public diplomacy, which is, you know, talking to the public about all this. And one very good example of this was the panel that you actually organized in Toronto last week.
Yes, and I want to mention that on Wednesday, August the 17th, two of my colleagues here at the NATO Association of Canada, Leila Wapi and Adil Alsinkaya, successfully organized an event which focused on mass migration and border control, a divide in the European Union. As one of the panelists, can you please discuss the significance and the impact of the panel discussion along with the overall success of this event?
Well, I mean, first of all, let me thank again the NATO Association for organizing this panel and for inviting us as the European Union delegation to the event, because it allowed us to explain a little bit the point of view of the European Union on this issue. And as I mentioned, I think, several times at the panel, here, to speak about migration, we have to start thinking that migration is not a European problem. It's a global challenge. When you think about the fact that in the world there are more than 60 million people which are refugees, it's a global phenomenon. Now, of course, the European Union is at the center of this because of its geographic location, first and foremost, of this mass migration phenomenon. And also because the European Union is a rich, it's an affluent society, and it's an open society, which is open to people coming from abroad. If you look at from the perspective of Canada, Canada is the privilege in a way or the advantage of having different borders being separated by two big oceans and a big neighbor to the south. Though, despite this, Canada remains, as the European Union, a very open and welcoming society. That is a very important thing. So the panel, I think, was a very good occasion for us to present the issue from a European perspective, which is sometimes lost, of course, for obvious reasons, in the media debate and in the public debate. The European Union is often criticized. Let's not shy away from that because of its response to the challenge. I think, and I mentioned there at the panel as well very openly that some of the criticism is warranted, perhaps deserved, but also it's important to explain the context of this phenomenon and to explain the scale of the challenge of this phenomenon to raise even simple awareness in the public in Canada about what are the real what is the real scope of this challenge. Speaking about the panel itself, I really appreciate the frank discussion. I was not perhaps the most popular guy in the panel, of course, because representing the European Union. But I had the impression that the other panelists as well and the participants had the opportunity to gain an inside view on how the European Union is responding to this, a perspective from the European Union about how we see this challenge. And I say that we see it as a global challenge. And even if the points of view were different, which is absolutely normal, I think there was a very good understanding about the whole issue at the panel. So thank you again for having us there.
Thank you. And on behalf of the NATO Association of Canada, I would like to thank you for being a panelist. I felt that this event was a huge success because we had diplomats, government officials, consul generals, members of parliament, students, academics, everyone engaging in the discussion. And I want to mention that with an increasing flow of migrants coming into Europe, tensions are running high as European leaders are divided on how to respond to one of the largest migrant crises. With the work that you do, do you believe that European Union member states can respond effectively as a cohesive entity? And in addition, how are these expanding measures affecting migrants today?
Well, thank you very much for this question. I think it's one of the questions that I had the opportunity and the privilege to explain at the panel. Precisely, the panel was a good occasion to explain how the EU is responding to this, which sometimes is not very much perceived and understood outside the European Union. Sometimes the media are just focused on the daily issue, and they're not looking at the big picture of how the EU is responding to this. And I tried to explain that despite the challenges that the European Union is having from two main aspects. One is the scale, the scope of this challenge. I mentioned that in 2015 we had 1.3 million migrants arriving in the European Union.
Yes.
Out of these, 800,000 were asylum seekers. And all these, most of these 1.3 million, they arrived basically in two countries. So it's not the whole European Union. So can you imagine the scale of this issue at the borders itself? And the other part of the challenge is the fact that the political environment in the EU at the moment is not particularly favorable to immigration. Despite these two difficulties, the European Union has actually developed a unique strategy for dealing with this, which has been adopted by all the member states. So despite the different discussions in the public sphere, they actually agreed on this common migration strategy, which is focused on three areas, three different axes, let's call them like that. One is internal, which is basically aimed at relocating the refugees among all the member states. This is working slowly, perhaps more slowly than we expected, but it's in place. The second act of the strategy is to work at the border, so at the entry point. And this not as much as it's publicized in the media, not to close the borders, but actually to provide the borders with the capacity to process all these people that are coming, to examine the ones that have the right to be granted asylum or the ones that are economic migrants. So you need to process, to identify these people, and to start the legal process with each of them. So this is working with what we call hotspots, so reinforced border points where there are experts dealing with individual cases. And I think perhaps most important of the strategy, the external aspect of it, which is aimed at tackling the external causes of the root causes of the migration and the refugees, which is basically on the one side economic migration, and this is done by working with origin countries, mostly in Africa, to bring economic development and economic opportunities directly into these countries with the cooperation of the European Union, so that people are not forced to leave. They are happy to live in their own country because they have economic and social opportunities to be there. And the second aspect of this is to work politically on addressing the crises that are the source of the refugees. Okay? First and foremost, the Syrian crisis, where the European Union is working with other partners like the US and Canada and others to solve to address the issue and stop the war. This is not easy, it's clear. We're not the only ones there. It's a challenge, but you know, it's part of the strategy to address the root causes